Good morning, everyone. This is Patrick Cuccinelli, Senior Director of Public Policy at Leading Age, formerly NIASA. Welcome to our audio conference on avoiding e-prescribing penalties. The PowerPoint and additional information for today's session is on the same webpage you accessed for the call-in information. This session is being recorded and will be available later today for other staff in your organization to review. You can access the recording on this webpage. This audio conference is sponsored by the Foundation for Long-Term Care. Please note that there are no credits being offered today. We will be holding questions until the end. Organizations that do physician billing are facing a penalty situation under the current Medicare requirements for e-prescribing. In our session, we will share some important strategies developed to simplify how Leading Age New York members can deal with the situation. Our presenters are Brad Markowitz, the CEO of Park Avenue Healthcare, Stephen Shinani, Esquire of Garfunkel, Wild & Travis, and Wayne Cook, Vice President of Park Avenue Healthcare. Please join me in welcoming our presenters. And just on a personal note, we did put this session together very quickly at the last minute with the fact that many of our members were receiving these notices. And I am extremely grateful to Brad, Stephen, and Wayne for coming through for us on very short notice. So I'll let you guys take it away.
Thanks, Patrick. This is Brad Markowitz speaking. Just for those of you that don't know us, just to briefly identify ourselves, Park Avenue Healthcare Management is the management organization for Park Avenue Medical Associates, PC. Park Avenue Medical Associates is an independent physician group that is exclusively focused on providing care to residents of long-term care facilities. We're the largest provider, Park Avenue Medical Associates is the largest provider of medical services to residents of nursing homes in the state of New York. We've worked for many years closely with Garfunkel Wild, which formerly known as Garfunkel Wild & Travis, which many of you know is one of the leading healthcare law firms in New York. You do have an agenda in front of you. The gist of what we're trying to do, though, is to go through the presentation before taking questions. Wayne will speak first and talk about, in essence, what the rules are. Then I will and Steve will talk a bit about the details of identifying whether or not you have a hardship exception that you can file for. And then Wayne will come back on and talk through mechanical details, both of filing the hardship exception, which, of course, there's only 24 hours roughly left to do, and then talk some about what's involved in going forward filing to or reporting that one has successfully e-prescribed, which is relevant for the balance of the year since there is a bonus opportunity that is paired with the penalty that that Wayne will speak about in a moment. So with that, I'll turn it over to Wayne.
Thank you, Brad, and thanks, everybody, for joining today. My name is Wayne Cook with Park Avenue Healthcare, and I have been the lead at Park Avenue in getting our physicians to e-prescribe. And so if you have a copy of the PowerPoint, which we sent along today, we're going to stay pretty close to that and then answer questions at the end. And in essence of time, what I will do is just go right through that agenda and share with you things you probably are aware of, but just to reemphasize them, you have until tomorrow, if you have not e-prescribed, to file for hardship if that is something that fits what you've done. So one of the things you need to take a look at is on the first screen or the first slide, what we've talked about is you had to have e-prescribed at least 10 eligible visits between the first of this year and June 30th, 2011. In that time period, you then had to report those by the end of July. So if you haven't done that, then that's what we're talking about today. You may result in a 1% reduction of your fee schedule in 2012. So if any of the hardships that we talk about in the following slides apply to you, you will have the ability to go on and request that hardship via a CMS page, which will have to be done by midnight tomorrow night. So what we also have on that first page is this is something that's not going to end in 2011 and 2012. You are going to have penalties as we go down the road further. We're not going to specifically talk about those today because we want to focus on if you can claim a hardship what you can do in the next 24 hours. So the requirements for that is basically any eligible professional, and that is a number of different types of providers, MDs, NPs, DOs, and others. If you have prescribing authority, then you should have prescribed at least 10 times at the beginning of the year. We also have on the second screen what CMS is looking at as the denominator, meaning if those procedure codes were performed at least 100 times and they were at least 10% of your annual Part B charges, then you will be subject to that penalty if you did not e-prescribe. And then the last part of that is that you did have to use a qualified e-prescribing program for Part D standards. And there are a number of them out there, some that you pay for, some that you don't. And then we're going to talk later as well about how would you have reported those. So we can talk about that. That may be more important for you going forward, but that kind of gives you an idea of are you an eligible professional and will you be subject to that penalty if you did not do at least 10 of those visits electronically. The next screen here is where I'm going to ask Brad to take over, where we discuss the different hardships that are out there. CMS did provide 6 different hardships that you can claim when you go out there. And so Brad's going to talk a little bit about what those 6 are, what we did as an organization and why, and then you can determine if those may apply to you. So Brad, go ahead.
Thanks, Wayne. First of all, Park Avenue did have some eligible professionals that reported the 10 e-prescribing transactions. So we had some where this does not become an issue. We also had some that didn't, and we don't think that we have a basis for applying for a hardship. Just because you didn't report the 10 doesn't mean you automatically qualify for a hardship. I'll give you one example is a facility where we provide services, and at the beginning of the year, the facility did have a qualifying e-prescribing system. In that case, it was a system called MedSend that the physicians were using. And they turned it off before we started doing our reporting. So the fact that we made a mistake is not a hardship. That's just our problem. And in those cases, with those physicians, we're going to have to suffer the 1% penalty. That was our judgment. We also have quite a few eligible professionals, however, where we did apply for the hardship. The problem, of course, is that CMS has not been terribly clear about how the rules fit the realities of long-term care practice. In the final rule, which is available in the Federal Register and which I studied in great detail, as did Wayne and Steve, a question was specifically repeated in the final rule. Those of you who have looked at these rules know that they outline questions or comments that were posed after the preliminary rule is published. And one of the questions that was repeated was regarding nursing home practice. Unfortunately, the answer effectively sidestepped the question. So it just makes it more difficult for all of us. Where eligible professionals did file hardship exemption requests, we used for various of our providers one or more of the rural area without high-speed internet option, because we did have some that we felt fit that. We used the local, state, and federal regulation option. We had some that we thought fit that. And or we had some, in particular, specialist physicians where the do not prescribe on a regular basis option seemed applicable. We prepared and had vetted by our counsel, by Steve Shinani and his firm, suggested language for our providers that carefully follow the rules regarding the content of the request. If you've looked at the, and Wayne will get into afterwards, the form that has to be filled out, there's some language that the eligible professional has to fill in explaining and justifying the request or the exemption category that they've selected. The choice of category is critical and is going to be based on your own unique facts and circumstances. But that that free text box does have specific requirements that have to be followed. For example, the local, state, or federal regulation category that some of our providers used, you have to specify the exact local, state, or federal regulation that you believe prevented the eligible professional from e-prescribing. So with that as a general background, Steve will now talk for a few minutes about those factors and how you can decide which of the categories may fit your situation. After that, he'll turn the presentation back over to Wayne, who, as I said before, will talk for a few minutes about the mechanics of how to report the hardship exemption request, and then also how to avoid the penalties and receive the bonuses going forward after you've dealt with the hardship exemption request. There's still a relatively short time frame to make decisions about what you're going to do for the balance of the year. So, Steve?
All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Brad. I'm Stephen Shinani. Just so everyone knows who I am, I'm a partner director at Garfunkel Wild. I'm also one of the co-chairs of our compliance group here, and I did work with Park Avenue on the hardship exemption applications. Let me just stand back for a moment from a legal point of view, give you a few caveats and directions sort of generally. These hardship exemptions that you will apply for if you feel they're applicable to you, you've got to look very carefully at your specific facts and circumstances, as Brad indicated. CMS has said that they will review the hardship applications on a case-by-case basis. So simply because you file it does not mean you will necessarily get the hardship exemption and be exempt from the potential penalties that are out there. Nonetheless, there's sort of a practical issue here as well from CMS's point of view. It is our understanding that CMS is being inundated with these hardship applications, and whether or to what degree they're really going to be able to do a case-by-case analysis, only time will tell. From my point of view, from a legal point of view, what I strongly recommend is that when you make the hardship exemption application, you need to do it on a good faith and transparent basis. So you have to look at the hardship exemptions that are available, one of the six, look at your facts and circumstances, and really make a good faith analysis or judgment that this does apply to you. Then when you apply for the exemption, and Wayne will go through how to do that, there is a space where you can and are required to give a justification statement of why the specific category you're referring to does apply to you. So, for instance, if you are using the inability to electronically prescribe due to local, state, or federal regulations, you need to cite the specific regulation. I'll give in a moment what one I think would apply generally or might apply in New York. And then you have to give an explanation of why you feel that actually does impose a hardship on the physician's ability to e-prescribe. And the same is true with the other exemptions as well. You have to go through that facts or circumstances. My concern is that I want to make sure that when a provider applies for the exemption, it is in good faith, it's clearly in good faith, and the justification is fully set out. So CMS won't come back and say, gee, you were gaming the system in some way. Good, bad, or indifferent, whether they grant the exemption or not, whether they grant it inappropriately or not, you want to make sure that you've been up front with CMS and you haven't played any games. Now, in terms of long-term facilities, care facilities, and nursing homes, as Brad mentioned, I think it's worth repeating, the commentary in the Federal Register, there was a specific question about home visits, military, nursing homes, long-term care, et cetera. And in the answer to that, CMS did not – they addressed home visits and some of the other categories, but not long-term care facilities. And with home visits, for instance, they said, well, even if a physician is doing home visits, we still think they have the opportunity or ability to e-prescribe, and therefore we're not going to give a blanket hardship exemption for home visits. But they didn't address nursing homes. And one of the issues that we looked at carefully when Park Avenue was at the exemption on inability to electronically prescribe due to local, state, or federal regulations. Now, again, there's not a lot of guidance in the Federal Register as to how to use that particular exemption, which I'm going to spend a few moments on now. They did give one example that you cannot prescribe narcotics, for instance, due to, you know, a law that is out there in your state or federally, what as the case may be, and therefore your ability to e-prescribe narcotics is limited as a result of the force and effect of law. That's a pretty straightforward example, but CMS went on to say that is not the only circumstance where this hardship exemption would apply, and there could be others where the impact of law can undermine your ability or limit your ability to do e-prescribing. Now, what we looked at in particular in New York, and now I'll give you the site, was 10 NYCRR 415.18. So that's 10 New York Code of Rules and Regulations, NYCRR 415.18. And the reason why this regulation is interesting and applies to at least to some groups that are out there is that it provides that the facility, the long-term facility, shall provide drugs and biologicals directly to its residents, and it has the obligation to develop and implement policies and procedures that assure the accurate acquisition, receipt, dispensing, and administering of drugs, i.e., as we all know, it's the nursing home's responsibility to provide drugs and biologicals to the residents, and the physicians do not have the ability to go off to their own e-prescribing system or some other e-prescribing system. They have to do it through the workflow of the nursing home. So for independent groups of nursing homes, if the nursing home does not have a qualifying e-prescribing system, what are they to do? Well, the position that that we took, and we were fairly transparent about it, was, well, gee, under New York state law, the physicians are dependent on the nursing home having that system. The nursing home does not have such a qualifying system. Therefore, we don't have an ability, as a result of no fault of our own, to necessarily do e-prescribing at that facility. Therefore, there's a hardship on that basis, and therefore we couldn't do the requisite number of e-prescribings. Now, for nursing homes that employ physicians and who do not have an e-prescribing system in place that those physicians use, you know, potentially the same argument can be made, although I think, you know, some further close looking at that needs to be done. The argument can certainly be made that physician, even though he's employed or she's employed, still cannot do the e-prescribing due to the result of the facility's lack of an e-prescribing system, even though they are employed. I guess CMS could come back and deny the application and say, well, you're employed by the system, therefore the system, the facility, therefore the facility's failure will be attributed to you. We don't know what position CMS will make, but I would recommend if you're going to use that approach, be very transparent and make sure everything is disclosed to CMS. On the flip side, if the facility does have a qualifying e-prescribing system that is available to the physicians employed or otherwise at the facility, then this particular exemption relating to inability to prescribe due to local, state, or federal regulations, in my opinion, would not apply, because that directive from New York State, and it's similar in other states as well, that you have to go through the nursing home, is not an impediment to your ability to e-prescribe and report such, as Wayne will go through in a minute. So bottom line is, look at the exemptions. I sort of detailed that one, but the other ones that might apply are, you know, again, due to the nature of your practice, you're simply not writing prescriptions at all at the requisite number, and you have a low prescription activity, or the nature of your services. And you can look at each of the exemptions and see if they apply. Be very precise. Pick the ones that, in good faith, you think apply to you and give the justification. All right, with that, I'll turn it back to Wayne to go through some of the nuts and bolts of the process.
Thanks, Stephen. Okay, if you're following along on your slide, the slide that we're going to move to now is called Next Steps. And what we're going to talk about there is just exactly the basics of what do you need to do if you believe a hardship applies to you within the next 24 hours to get that into CMS and make sure that you're covered. So, again, the hardship needs to be reported by a couple of things. One thing that they do state is that the provider themselves has to fill this out. You cannot have office staff, personnel, do this completion for you. So it's something that the provider has to do. We very closely contacted all of our providers, gave them the information of how to get onto the site so that they could do that reporting. But it does state, and we've talked to QualityNet that manages this, that the provider is the one that has to complete this hardship request. So if you follow along, there's a website that you'll need to go to. This is the only way that you can do it. It's QualityNet, www.qualitynet.org, and then /PQRS. You'll see on the left-hand side when you go in there that there's a link. It's called Communication Support Page. And once you select that, it will take you into the form that you have to fill out. Now, we've also provided for you on the website an example of each of the fields that are going to be on that communication support page and specifically what needs to go into them. I will also say that the help staff at QualityNet, should you need to call them, is very responsive. Even though they are inundated with calls, they will help you through it, and they have been very helpful to us. The other point that I'll make is that because so many people are trying to fill this out, you may get into the site and it might not be responding to you. The best thing that I can recommend in that situation is try again later, maybe 15 minutes, maybe an hour, but just keep trying. And we've been told that because so many people are requesting this hardship, that the site is a little bit overwhelmed at this point. Once you complete that by following the instructions that we've provided and putting in the specific hardship if that applies to you, once you complete that and send it in, what we typically saw was within 5 minutes, you will receive an email back based upon the email address you put in to you, validating that they have received that. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer, and I think that, again, is based upon the volume of people that are requesting at the time. But keep that for your records. That's your only information that you have that validates that you've completed this form properly. And then it really is a waiting game for CMS to review each of these on a case-by-case basis and get back to you and let you know whether or not your hardship has been accepted. So keep that email that comes back. That's what's for your records. And use that when you get your final information back from CMS. Now, the last page that we have here before questions talks about what a qualified e-prescribing program is and what the reporting options are. That's probably more pertinent to going forward. And so I'll talk about those briefly, and we can take questions on that as well. But this is really more for going forward. If you're going to use an e-prescribing system, what are the qualifications of it, and then how do you report those prescriptions to CMS? The piece that we just went over is really what's most important for you within the next 24 hours, because you have until midnight tomorrow night, if you are going to claim a hardship and it pertains to you, to complete that form. So I'll quickly go through the qualified prescription system. There are basically four components of a qualified e-prescribing system. What I would ask that you do is if you go out there and you select a system, there are some that are at no cost to you. There are some that they will charge you for. For those providers that we did not have a system in-house that we thought we could do the e-prescribing for, we chose the company Allscripts, and we chose their free version. I will let you know that there is a learning curve on it. It's not something that can be picked up relatively quickly and just start with. We had success with some providers and not success with others, so it is definitely a learning curve on it. But once you choose a vendor, ask them if they are a qualified e-prescribing system, and that will guarantee, if you do it going forward, that what you send in is going to be counted. And so the four bullet points on there is that those prescription systems must have a complete medication list. It must allow you to select those medications, print those prescriptions, and transmit them electronically. It must also provide you alternative therapeutic alternatives at a lower cost. Should you choose a specific drug, it will give you other options. And then lastly, it should give you information on the formulary medications. So those are the three things, or the four pieces. Ask the vendors, make sure that they approve it if you're going to use it going forward, and that's the best way to do it. And then you'll need to work with your billing staff to report that information on the claim form along with the denominator code. It must be on the same claim form in order to count. So that's just a very quick overview of what you would do going forward. And what I'll do now, unless Brad or Stephen, you have additional comments, I'll be able to take questions as well as the rest of the group.
This is Brad speaking. I just have a couple of quick comments. In terms of the experience you're going to have with providers that you ask this morning or this afternoon to file for this hardship exception between now and tomorrow night, if they're saying that they're having difficulty getting on the website, one suggestion is to ask them to do it from home late at night, because obviously during the business day there's going to be more traffic. Late at night may be better. Very early in the morning, if they're morning people, as many physicians are, may also be an option. But as some of you know, originally the deadline was November 1st. It was extended to November 8th because of complaints being made about lack of access to the website. That's the input that we gave to our providers that were struggling because they waited to the last minute, and some of them did have success on off hours. Another topic that came up with some providers that's worth reiterating is that when they're filling out that form, and if you look at the instruction sheet that Wayne provided, there's a place to fill in a legal name of entity and a place to fill in tax ID number. That should be the information about the billing entity, which would presumably be the facility if the physician is employed by the facility. So the legal name of the entity is not the physician, it's the entity that's doing the billing. Likewise, the tax ID number is the tax ID number of the billing entity. And these rules are, best we've been able to determine and based on the input we've gotten from CMS, they're specific to the tax ID number that the claims are being submitted under. So a physician that has a qualifying e-prescribing system in their office practice, if they're working for the facility part-time, have a part-time office practice, what they do outside of the facility is irrelevant. It's what they're doing when the claims are being billed under your tax ID number. Lastly, on the issue of what is an e-prescribing system, it's worth noting that it may not look like an e-prescribing system at first, and if you take a step back, you'll realize that the EHR, for those facilities that have an electronic health record that's being implemented in your facility, the EHR may in fact have a qualified e-prescribing system embedded into it. So by way of example, SigmaCare, which some of you may have, and is to my knowledge the most widely used facility-based EHR at this moment in New York, does have a CPOE system embedded into it, and based on the answers that SigmaCare gave us, we concluded that that was a qualified e-prescribing system. So just a few pointers there that came up in my mind as Wayne was presenting.
All right, I guess at that point we open it up for questions, if there are any.
Yes, sir. At this time, if you have a question or a comment, simply press 1 on your touchtone phone now. Please only press 1 once. If you press it twice, it will remove you from the queue. Our first question will come from Patrick Donnellan.
Thank you. In our facility, we have an electronic medical record that has been in use here for a number of years. We also have an in-house pharmacy. And while I don't know the technical answer about the CPOE system, it's clearly electronic in terms of medications. And if it turns out that we do not use SigmaCare, by the way, if it turns out that for whatever combination of reasons that is not a qualified system, then that's, I would think, we would have that exception where it's the nursing home's requirements that prevent the physician from doing it. that would be the hardship that we would accept. I just don't understand. To me, it seems rather simplistic. We have an electronic medical system that transmits the prescriptions from the physician orders to the pharmacy. I can't imagine what could be any more electronic than that, but leave it to CMS to come up with something to confuse it. And our physicians, it's a salaried medical staff. They do not work elsewhere. So there's nothing outside of their out of this practice that could possibly get in the way. So I guess that was a long-winded question, but sorry.
I guess this is Stephen Shinani. I'll answer from the legal point of view, and then maybe Brad or Wayne can talk about the specifics. Let's assume for a moment that this electronic EMR and the in-house pharmacy does not qualify as an e-prescribing program for it doesn't meet the four requirements or whatever, does not meet it. I think, you know, you can certainly look to apply for the exception as a result of state rules, cite the reg that I gave. But I think you also need to be, again, very transparent that we're talking about employed physicians at your facility and that they have the inability to do it because you don't have a qualified system. You don't want to be in a situation where they end up granting you the exemption and then come back and say, oh, you hid facts from us, you know, you misrepresented. So just be very upfront about it. Now, the assumption is that hopefully CMS will grant the exemption, in fact, if you don't have a qualified e-prescribing system, even with employed physicians. But we won't know that until they actually start ruling on these case by case to see how they respond to that type of a situation. Wayne or Brad, do you have anything to add on that?
Well, the only thing I would say is, Pat, I agree with you. You never know how CMS's rules will apply to your specific situation, but it's hard to believe that what you're describing would not count as a qualified system. If it's a qualified system, you're kind of stuck with the 1% penalty because you did e-prescribe, but you didn't report 10 instances of e-prescribing by the end of July.
But I can fix it going forward.
You could fix exactly my point. And so the bad news is you get a 1% ding. The good news is if you report 25 of the e-prescriptions, and anybody who's working full-time in the facility, given the nature of our patients, they're doing 25 electronic prescriptions between now and the end of the year, to be sure. So you can report 25 instances between now and the end of the year. You get a 1% bonus. So you don't actually lose anything because the bonus will offset the penalty. And then going forward, you'll get the bonuses. The bonuses shrink over the next couple of years, as outlined in the chart that Wayne provided. But it's something.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question will come from Diane Kane.
Hi, good morning. I have several questions. On the communications support page where it says NPI number, I'm an employed physician. We have an employed MD-NP group at our nursing home. The organization has an NPI, and obviously each provider has an NPI. Whose NPI number do they want on this form?
Yeah, I'll jump in on that since I made the comment about the legal entity and tax ID number being the facility. If the facility is the billing entity. So I should have completed the thought by saying that our understanding is the NPI is the NPI of the individual provider.
Okay, good.
It's not terribly clear, I think. It's not terribly clear in the instructions provided by CMS, but based on the guidance that we received from QualityNet, that's the instruction we gave to all of our providers.
Okay, and I have a couple of other questions. Did I hear you correctly that if between now and the end of the year, if we do 25 or I forget if you said it was 10 or 25 e-prescriptions, we will not get penalized, plus we'll be eligible for the bonus in 20?
Well, it's kind of a bizarre thing where you could both get the penalty and the bonus in the same year, but I'm not saying you wouldn't receive the penalty. You would receive a penalty, but the penalty would be largely offset by the bonus that you receive for doing 25 or reporting 25 in the balance of the year.
Okay, I got it. And last question, if you're using the hardship exemption, pardon me, limited prescribing activity, What's their definition of that?
Steve, do you want to take that, or you?
No, and the limited prescribing activity, I'm just trying to see if I can get.
Yeah.
If you have it on the top of your head, Brad, go ahead.
I'm not 100% sure off the top of my head as to the number, but here's the problem with that, at least the problem that we encountered when we looked at it. If you prescribed at all, then you're supposed to, in the narrative box, identify how many you did. Who know? You know, if you did seven, somebody's going to go back through all their records for the first 6 months and figure out that you did seven. It's not feasible. So the providers that use that within our group were people who never prescribe. An example is a psychiatrist. I mean, we're a multi-specialty group. I'm assuming that most of the people on this call are looking at primary care physicians that they're concerned about. But a psychiatrist who only goes to facilities where the consultants merely recommend and never actually prescribe, then it was easy because we said zero. There is a number. If you contact me afterwards, I know where to look it up, but I don't want to state a number and get it wrong.
And I just to clarify, they're talking about limited prescribing activity overall, not limited e-prescribing necessarily under that exception.
That's right.
So they're saying, the commentary says, we believe it is a significant hardship for eligible professionals who have prescribing privileges but infrequently prescribe to become successful because they may limit the number of opportunities they have to e-prescribe. Or to prescribe at all, much less electronically. So the idea is, forget about prescribing electronically. You're not even prescribing medications at all or very limited nature. So, of course, you're not going to be able to do e-prescribing in a sufficient quantity to meet the requirements.
Yeah, so just to further illustrate Steve's point, the psychiatrist who goes to multiple facilities, who's employed by Park Avenue, and goes to a facility where he does write prescriptions, but they do not have a qualified e-prescribing system, we did not recommend to the provider that they use the do not prescribe on a regular basis option. We recommended that they only use the local, state, and federal regulation option in that case.
Okay. My example was actually I have a very small assisted living practice plus a few independent elders in a continuum of care community. And I write about maybe 50 prescriptions a month, but from what you're saying, I don't think that's going to qualify me for a hardship.
No. I don't remember I don't want to quote the exact number, but 50 a month would definitely not. It's a very small number. The problem with that, we have a couple of providers that do that also. They spend 98% of their time in the skilled nursing facility, but see a very small number of patients in adult day program or an independent living facility that's adjacent to the nursing home. It's a problem because there they could easily e-prescribe if they had a system. And we have had some of those providers use the Allscripts system going forward. We've had providers that are using that system because they work on a short-term rehab unit and they're sending a lot of people home. And, guess what? It's a great option in that situation. Instead of writing out 7 or 8 or 9 prescriptions longhand and the patient or the resident or the family lose the prescription, et cetera, they just electronically send it off to the local CVS. So there are places where we've actually embraced it and used it in our practice, but that's the kind of thing that you look at going forward. Retrospectively, you just have to look at the rules and figure out whether you fit the hardship or not.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question will come from Mary Getchell. Okay, then we'll move on to Dana Penny.
Hi, I'm a little confused about this. We have a lot of employed physicians. We have only recently implemented over the past couple months the e-prescribing function of our EMR. And I'm trying to figure out whether we need to do anything or not as far as the hardship. We are backlogged on billing, so we haven't billed any of the visits since we implemented the e-prescribing. Very unclear to me how this penalty versus you know, bonus works.
What you're describing may be an interesting situation where you can both apply for and potentially receive the hardship exemption and also get the bonus so that you don't get dinged for the first 6 months. You're saying that you did not have a qualifying e-prescribing system in the facility in the first 6 months of this year?
Of 2011, yes.
Okay. So then you may be able to legitimately, and as Steve keeps pointing out, transparently apply for a hardship exemption. Yet, if you're doing electronic prescribing through a qualifying system now, you have until the end of January 2012 to report 25 instances and get paid your bonus.
Okay, but doesn't that qualify me for the non-penalty for next year?
No. No, the penalty for 2012 is based solely on what you did in the first 6 months of 2011. It has nothing to do with what you're doing in the second 6 months of 2011.
So they're penalizing us for being prepared for 2012. Okay.
This is Wayne. There's actually one point that you can look closely at that I believe if you implemented the electronic health record prior to October 1st of 2011.
We did.
Then you have the capability to claim a hardship, and there is a hardship line that says we implemented a certified electronic health record in that communication support page. One of the things that came back from all of the correspondence with CMS prior to them putting all of the hardships out was that groups had said, we've implemented a certified electronic health record, but we have not implemented the e-prescribing component of it, or we're not sure if the e-prescribing component of it is something that meets the qualified system. So because there are over 500 certified records out there, CMS came back and said, if it is a certified record, we are going to assume that it has a qualified e-prescribing system in it, whether it does or it doesn't. And so if you implemented a certified health record prior to October 1st, you have the capability to claim the hardship that you have actually implemented that health record. And so that will help you avoid the penalty for the first part of the year. However, going forward for the second part of the year, you do have to, my understanding, is that you do have to still prescribe and report an additional 25 to get that incentive for 2012.
But let me just add one thing. What I agree with everything that Wayne said, but the key word there is certified. Most electronic health records that facilities are looking at and or implementing are not certified. The certification process is set up and designed for ambulatory physician EMRs. And the certification process, and if you've heard the phrase meaningful use,
right,
those two things, if they are true, get the physician a payment, a significant payment from the stimulus bill.
Right.
Because
we're institutionally based, we're not eligible for those payments.
Well, here's an interesting point. If the EHR that you were implementing is certified, and if it is capable of and does demonstrate meaningful use, the physician is eligible for that payment, which is, depending if you use the Medicare program, it's $44,000. If you use the Medicaid program, I think it's $63,750 that you get. The physician can assign that payment to whomever the physician chooses to. So the physician can, as a term of employment, be asked to assign that to the facility. But in my experience, and I'm not claiming to be an expert in facility EHRs, but we've had some pretty significant contact with them, everybody that I've spoken to who is running a facility EHR business is saying, we're not doing it. It's not possible for the system that we've put together, which is designed to support the nursing home, to meet the requirements that have been laid out for physician EMRs to be certified and demonstrate meaningful use. It's an easy thing to find out, though. You just talk to your vendor and say, are you certified? If so, there is a certification number, and you have to attest that you are using a certified EMR, and they'll ask you in the various places that you attest, they'll ask you to report that certification number.
Okay, yeah, okay, so that's, I saw that in the exemption request, in the hardship.
Yeah.
But if, and just as far as ease of use, and rather than wrangling all these physicians, you're saying that it has to be done, like all the physicians are employed by the facilities. I've got three facilities, or most of the physicians are employed by the facilities. And they've got their own MPI numbers, and then there is a group MPI number for the medical department with the facility tax ID number. So that's the billing provider. So that's not whom we put the exemption under. We put it under the individual physician.
Our understanding is that the when you fill out the form online, it has to be the doctor who does it. It's very tempting to have somebody else do it for them, but that's not permitted. The legal name of the entity is the legal name of the entity that's billing and receiving the payments. Again, presumably the facility, but it could be a controlled PC situation, a captive PC situation. The tax ID number would be the tax ID number not of the individual provider, but of the billing entity. The NPI number would be of the individual provider.
Right.
So it would be the doctor's NPI number. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it. That's how CMS will know that you're talking about Dr. Smith at Nursing Home X, which is receiving the payments under that tax ID number.
Right. Okay. But now what I'm a little bit worried about is not having the correct name as it appears under PCOS, because I don't have access to everybody's PCOS file.
But you're not looking for their exact name. You're looking. You're giving them the name. What we did was that sheet that Wayne attached that you have on the website, we filled out the pieces that related to the group. So we filled out and gave to everybody a sheet that said Park Avenue Medical Associates PC, had our tax ID number, and we actually, certainly in your situation, the logical thing to do would be to also put down their NPI number, make it foolproof since they have one day. You have their NPI numbers in your files. That should be pretty easy. Just give it to them. Tell them, fill it out this way. Most providers aren't going to know their NPI number, especially if they're full-time employees of a facility.
Right. Okay, so because we didn't, we can't report e-prescribing in the first 6 months of 2011,
You have to file a hardship exemption request if you have one that you feel you can legitimately file under.
Right, but that is the reason, because we didn't report anybody in the first 6 months of 2011, why we're getting the penalty in the 2012.
That's right, unless you file for the hardship exemption request.
Okay.
Hi, I'm with Dana. If you have a qualified system that sends an electronic prescription, but the pharmacy doesn't receive it electronically, it receives it either by a fax or through a printer, is that still qualified?
It is a qualified system if you are sending it electronically. There are instances where the intermediary in the middle will fax that down to the pharmacy. If you fax it, it is not qualified. If you send it electronically, and some intermediary in the middle, like SureScripts, faxes it to the pharmacy, that is considered qualified.
What if the system itself generates the printed, in other words, the electronic RX then becomes a printout in the pharmacy?
As long as you're sending it electronically, if you print it and fax it yourself, that does not count. But as long as the component that you're doing is electronic.
It actually prints in the pharmacy. Okay.
Shante, this is Patrick. Do we have other questions in the queue?
We do have a few more.
Okay.
Maybe we can move on and we can do some more talking offline. Give some other people a chance.
Okay, next in queue we have Thomas Pingree.
Hi, how are you? I just want to clarify a couple of things I think you've already answered. On the instructions for the application under legal business name, I'm assuming we're using the legal business name associated with the tax ID number?
Yes, that's our understanding, and that it would be the and the legal business name and tax ID number would be the billing entity for the claims that are being reported with G-codes if you were e-prescribing.
Okay. And the other question is just to confirm what you're talking about with the use of electronic prescribing for folks who are being discharged back to the community. If we use a system such as Allscripts for those discharges, transmitting them to the local community pharmacies, that would qualify us if we have enough transactions in the following year to avoid the penalty. Is that correct?
Well, for 2000, to avoid the penalty in 2012, it would have been had to have been activity in the first 6 months of 2011. But going forward, if somebody started using the Allscripts system or any system today, in conjunction with discharges back to the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, as I said, having nothing to do with these e-prescribing rules, is a nice addition to the practice of your providers. Yeah, it qualifies you for the bonus and avoids future penalties.
Okay, great. So thank you very much.
Our next question will come from Cherie Rivas.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to clarify a couple questions. What my question is, so my understanding is that nursing homes do have to apply for this, correct?
Well, the individual eligible professional is the one who actually has to apply for it. But the fact that a physician is employed by a nursing home does not in and of itself avoid the penalty.
Okay. I have three physicians here that are employed by the nursing home, work no place else. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So would they apply for this? All the billing is done by the nursing home. So would this affect them?
Yes.
Okay. So when they fill out their for the hardship, if we find something that will apply to them, so each one of them will have to fill it out under the legal business name of the nursing home with the tax ID number, correct?
That's correct, and their individual NPI number.
Okay. We also have an adult care facility that they work with also. Would this just go completely with what they're doing here, or would they have to do something separately?
When they work in that adult care facility, are they doing it as an employee of the nursing home?
Yes.
Well, then you have to look carefully at the hardship exemption request. It may complicate your ability to claim a hardship exemption. You'd have to find a category that would apply to everything that they're doing as employees of the nursing home. So, you know, for instance, you're in a rural area where there's no internet connectivity, you may be able to use that as the category. But my understanding and the way that we used these rules, if we have somebody who is seeing patients outside of the nursing home, we can't use the local, state, or federal regulation that is applicable to the nursing home but not to the adult care facility as the reason for the hardship exemption request.
Okay. All right. I guess that's my only questions here.
Yeah.
We have to figure out.
And if you're in that circumstance, the way to deal with it is, I think, is not to throw up your hands and say, you know, we got screwed. It's to say, all right, now we're going to do what we need to in order to get the bonus to offset the 1% penalty and to get the bonus going forward and avoid future penalties.
Right. We are in the process of getting an electronic medical records here. It's going to be implemented probably by June of next year. So this year we're going to not have much to do, I don't think, but hopefully in the future we'll be able to take care of this.
But that would apply presumably to the nursing home and not to the other sites of service these docs are using or working in?
It will apply to both. We'll have the electronic at both facilities. It's all under one campus. It's just two different separate buildings.
Right. So, again, you may want to look at the Allscripts or some other free application. We didn't want to invest heavily into either in cash or in time into an application that we knew was just going to be an interim as we moved towards an EMR. So that's what we did. We used Allscripts and said maybe this will tide us over. That may be something you want to look at for the end of this year and beginning of next year, and then just, you know, toss it in the trash can once you implement your EMR next year.
Okay, thank you. We'll look into that.
Okay, our next question will come from Colleen Wright.
Good morning. This is probably a pretty simple question, but we do not have an electronic medical records, and we're not doing anything electronically. So no hardship would apply to us. Is that correct?
No. I mean, we have plenty of facilities that are just to give you a sense, our group provides services in 130 facilities. Approximately 80 of them are in New York. There are plenty of facilities that we are in where everything's done on paper. Paper chart, you know, the old traditional way of ordering meds, et cetera, et cetera. And there were plenty of those facilities where we felt comfortable that we had a reasonable basis for applying for hardship exemption.
Which hardship would you select then?
Well, depending on who the physician was and which facility, the three that I mentioned before, either rural area without high-speed internet, do not prescribe on a regular basis, which was mostly the specialists, as I said, because there is no primary care physician that doesn't prescribe on a regular basis in a nursing home. And the third, which was the most common one, was the local, state, or federal regulation. You know, as Steve said, it's a little bit different when the physician is employed by the facility who has control over the environment. And obviously, Park Avenue does not have control over the environment because we're an independent group, not the facility. But that doesn't mean that if you follow the rules, you couldn't still say that the physician did not have the opportunity to prescribe. That's the hardship. They could not take an e-prescribing system and go around the workflow that has been set up by the facility for all sorts of obvious reasons that everyone on this call understands very well.
Okay. So we'll use that and say that he couldn't prescribe because we don't have a system.
Yeah, right. You know, again, you have to be really, really careful about how you write it out. And, you know, we spent a lot of time working on this, and we have a lot of expertise within our group dealing with these sorts of rules. We still felt it necessary to have that all vetted by our outside counsel to make certain that if CMS 5 years from now comes back and says you shouldn't have done that, the worst that can happen is that we have to give back the 1% that we didn't get penalized on. You know, I'm not interested, and I'm sure you're not interested either, in anybody ever being able to say that you did this in less than a completely transparent fashion. So my personal urging would be to have an attorney take a look at it and say, yeah, I'm good with this. This is sufficiently transparent.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, our next question will come from Alan Weider.
Yeah, good morning. I work in a long-term facility where we have salaried physicians. They don't have any practice outside of the facility. We've been with SigmaCare since mid-2009, and I'm not sure. I'd have to ask them if they have a certified e-prescribing system. I kind of assume they do, but I would check on that. But assuming they do...
If I can, let me just interrupt there. It's qualified, not certified. It's a key difference because certified refers to the physician EMRs that are going through an actual certification process. And as far as qualifying, what we did was to ask SigmaCare. And we felt comfortable with their answer in saying that it was qualified, but I'd urge you to do your own investigation. You can call either your account manager, or you may want to, with a short time frame, just call Lewis Hyman directly.
Uh-huh. To see if they have, if there's a qualifying e-prescribing system.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you, yes, it qualifies. They're not going to want to take responsibility for that. But what we did was to just go down the 4 points and say, just confirm for me. The system does this? Yes. The system does that? Yes. The system does that? Yes. Okay. They answer yes to all 4 points. Good to go. I made a reasonable good faith investigation, and, you know, this is one of those times where they're asking us to take responsibility for the judgment that the system meets the requirements and it's qualified.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a technologically oriented person. Wayne is, but there's no reason I felt there's no reason for us to make that investigation completely independently. Just asked the 4 questions, got the right answers, I'm good to go.
And if that's the case, is there any reporting that we have to do?
Yes, and that, Wayne, maybe you want to go over that again about the reporting that has to be done going forward. And in the past, it would have had to have been done so This is the category where I said our judgment was that we were stuck and we're going to have to suffer the 1% penalty, because even though we were e-prescribing with certain physicians, we didn't report it in a timely fashion.
Uh-huh.
So, Wayne, do you want to just comment on how to report the 25 going forward? Reiterate that?
You are referring to the 25 and not the past 10, correct, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. To report the 25 going forward, yes, there are three ways that you can report that. You can report that on the claim form along with the visit code. So on the same claim form, you would send in your standard CPT code as well as a CPT code of G8553, and you just put that in there for either a $0 amount or 1 cent. And if those two codes go together, that is how CMS, and it is accepted by Medicare, then that is how CMS would count that as one successful e-prescription. The other two ways to do it is if you use an outside registry. If you don't want to use report it on the claim form, you can contract with an outside organization. You can look them up on the Internet as well. They're considered certified registries, where you would give them the information and they would send it to CMS for you. They will charge you a fee for that. And then last, you would have to use a certified electronic health record product. So most likely, you're going to be using the process of reporting it on a claim form.
Uh-huh. I see. Thank you.
Brad, this is Patrick at Leading Age. We are past our allotted time. Are you guys okay for maybe one more question?
Sure.
Okay, Shante, one more question, please.
Yes, sir. Then our final question will come from Cindy Olmsted.
Yes, hi. I have a question in regard to hardships. If you have a physician who's salaried by the facility and two other physicians who have outside practices, yet we do not have the e-prescribing until January, where does that place us?
Well, I think you have to understand this is a eligible professional by eligible professional process. So presumably for the physician who is employed by the facility, you'd be concerned about that because it'd be your revenues that are being impacted going forward, and you should make the judgment about whether you can legitimately file for a hardship exemption request. As to the two physicians, excuse me?
We don't do any billing.
So the physician who's employed by you is providing medical services, but you just don't bill for the services.
He's the medical director.
And does no billable services?
We don't do the billing. He does the billable services, but the facility doesn't.
So he's employed as a medical director part-time, I take it you're saying, and also separately is providing medical services in the building and getting paid for that through his third-party billing.
Correct, but he doesn't bill for those medical services because he's salaried medical director.
Well, if he's a salaried, I mean, this is a different topic about, so we could take that offline about whether he can legitimately bill for those services or not. But if you're not billing any medical services under your tax ID number, then this isn't your financial concern in the first instance, because this only affects how much you're paid for services that are billed in the future, or how much of a bonus you receive on services that are provided in the future, or for the all of 2011 if you get 25 reported during this year. It, of course, behooves you to work with the physicians that are there from the community and give them some information about this. It will impact their revenues. If they're coming into the building and are not either e-prescribing sufficiently, which, again, if they're not working under the facility but working independently and they have an e-prescribing system in their office and are reporting on that, it doesn't matter whether or not there's an e-prescribing system in the building, because they get their 10 in the first 6 months, they get their 25 in for the year, they get paid the bonus and do not suffer the penalty on all of their Medicare billing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Brad, Steve, and Wayne, this is Patrick, and I just want to thank you again and thank Park Avenue and Garfunkel Wild for putting this together for us on very short notice. Obviously a very complex topic, and We're extremely grateful for your expertise on this.
No worries, and I believe our contact information, email and phone, is on the presentation. I know I can speak for all three of us. Please don't hesitate to contact any of us if you have any further questions or want some further input.
That's extremely generous. Thank you.
This officially ends the conference. Have a great afternoon.
All right, thank you.
Thank you all.